And Wren was writing for Lil. To me, it's Cuban Wren.
Nope,
that's it.
The most talented rapper in that entire group was the DOC.
He lost his voice with the car accident.
As far as speed and clarity, the most skilled at it was the DOC, in my opinion.
We need to continue this conversation at a later point. I don't know how we got from Joe's box of questions to your top 10 rappers of all time. But hey, that's what happens on this show. That is Bernstein and McKnight. You can hear them every day from 9 a.m. until noon right here on WSCR and HD Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago, Sports Radio 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station. And the top of the hour is being brought to you by Northwestern Football. And why not? Coach Fitz and the Big Ten West Division champions return to Ryan Field this Saturday when they host Michigan State. Kickoff is set for 11 a.m. Season and single game tickets are now on sale at nusports.com. And this hour is being brought to you by Sharp Vision Modern LASIK. Tony, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
I'm here about the business. Ain't that right, Joe?
Joe Madden.
He's got that flair about him. When his name's announced, the place erupts all the time, but he's always in the middle of something good.
Manager for the Chicago Cubs.
And then Cliff and Shelley, the Penguins. I mean, all this stuff, the Penguins, like, pooped all over. They poop every 15 minutes, apparently. That's what Penguins do. All over the brand-new rug on the other side. That's what's kind of fun to watch.
Hey, I learned a lot from watching Joe.
Joe Madden with Lawrence Holmes on 670 The Score.
Okay, nice.
Joe Madden's show is presented by Magellan Corporation. Joe joins me now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from. And now we get the opportunity to talk with the manager of your Chicago Cubs to open up the show. Hey, Joe, how are you?
Good afternoon, sir. I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing really well. I mean, this is a fun little run that your team is on right now, and it's something that you've been pointing to on the show for the last couple of weeks, feeling like a run like this is in there. So to see your team rattle off 5 in a row, to see them jump to the highest record that they've had as far as games above 500, how does this make you feel about the last 2 weeks of the season?
Well, in spite of all of our difficulties, we are playing pretty well. And again, the run's been in the offense. The offense has been spectacular. The entire homestand with Pittsburgh and them again last night. We're missing some really key components, obviously, but guys are filling these holes very well. Without Anthony and Javi in there, you look what Nico's doing right now. Caratini's picked up a lot of the load, and Schwarber's driving in a bunch of runs, which is really a nice progress for him. Bullpen holding their own, all that good stuff. So it's one at a time. We've got another Sonny Gray pitching for them tonight. He's been really tough on us. He's been tough on everybody all year. So this is a good test for us.
What's the impact of Rizzo being injured when it comes to how you're going to mix and match the lineup between first base and catcher or first base and third base?
Yeah, it's going to be primarily first base and catcher. It's not easy. I mean, listen, missing Riz is... because he also impacts our defense, but both Ian Happ and Caratini have both played well at first base since Anthony's been out. So it's gonna be mixing and matching. It's gonna, you know, we were missing Riz in that leadoff spot, but then again last night Joe stepped in there really well. You don't like not playing regular season and postseason games without Anthony and Javi. So hopefully both of them will get well.
How important is it in your mind? Because I know in football, a lot of times when a guy's injured, that they don't want that guy around. But for you, and there's been a history of this, when Schwarber was injured, you guys had him inside the clubhouse, and he was still around the team. How important is it for Rizzo to stay with the team throughout all of this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. You're right. There are certain guys that need to be around. Sometimes it can just be based on a service time, quite frankly. A younger player versus a guy that's been around has been a big part of what you've done. All that conversation matters. And that's why, I like policies, but sometimes you have to be flexible just based on common sense. So of course we want Riz there. Of course we do. Of course we want Javi there. Of course. So that's just the way this thing works. I'm a policy guy. I'm not a hard and fast rule guy. I think everything should be up for interpretation. But if you create a rule and you have to kind of live and die by it. But in this situation, we want Anthony to be around and hopefully accelerate his healing pace.
You've been through this with the Cubs your entire career with the Cubs, and obviously a lot of years with the Rays too. What's it like to manage inside of a pennant race?
Love it. It's a lot of fun. This is what you aim for on an annual basis. You want to make sure that these games mean something at this time of the year. There's nothing worse. When you get to this point of the year and the games have absolutely zero meaning whatsoever, it's just an awkward method. It's just it's not as much fun, quite frankly. And you're a professional. You go out there, you do your job. Of course you do, and you play, and you play hard. Of course you do. But that fun factor is missing. So to be pertinent this time of the year matters to us. It matters to the fan base. It matters to everybody affiliated with the Chicago Cubs. I think it's outstanding.
How do you stay tunneled on what your team is doing while simultaneously figuring out what's going on with the Nationals and Milwaukee and St. Louis and everyone else?
We have a big scoreboard, and it's right in my face the whole game, so I have no choice, and I'm fine with that. But at the end of the day, it's about us. We take care of our own businesses. This will all work out well for us in the conclusion. So, yeah, you look at the scoreboard, but it's about Cubs winning. And if the Cubs win, I really sincerely believe that the rest of this stuff will take care of itself.
Would you prefer that those scores are not on while you're playing?
No. It's reality. You'd probably say, hey, go check on the and such and such game. No, it doesn't. It doesn't matter. I mean, sometimes it could work to your advantage. In a way, if a game's concluded and the other team lost, does that inspire you? I don't know. It is what it is, man, and it's part of the landscape. But I've always been a scoreboard watcher from the beginning of the season.
Cubs manager Joe Maddon joining me here on The Score as we discuss the way things have gone for the Cubs. They've won 5 in a row. They'll play tonight. We will have that game against the Reds starting at 6:30 here on The Score. A couple guys I want to talk about offensively, and I don't mean this to slight anyone else because I have a ton of affection for Javi and for Rizzo and for Hayward, but there's something about when Bryant gets on one of these benches that makes you guys extra dangerous. I don't know how to describe it other than that, Joe, but when he's in a binge like this, your lineup just looks monstrous.
He probably bench hits as well as anybody that we have. I think you're right. When he gets this toasty, it stays for a while. He normally doesn't go in and out of these phases. So when he's like this right now, he's everything he's putting on the barrel. It's kind of like Castellanos. I mean, you can't discount what Nicklaus has done. I mean, he's been binging the whole since time he's been here. But when KB gets rolling, the ball ends up in the seats. He gets big hits. And then again, it's just about his whole game. How about the play made last night, that dive to his left? So right now, confidence-wise, he's at the zenith of his confidence. But there is. I mean, 16, whatever, he gets rolling, man. Normally good things do occur.
It seems like after the cortisone shot, that knee seems to be okay for him right now. I know that you were talking about that just sometimes feeling like a little twinge here or there, and it changes the way that you have an at-bat. Does he look like, both defensively and offensively, a guy that's a little bit better off?
He's not guarding. You know, that's the thing when you're expecting pain at the conclusion of a physical action. There's kind of that moment, that hesitation, that lack of fluidity that you normally see. And right now, it's just swings looking all that. How about like the one-hand Fred homer to left, down and away slider on, I saw the replay, it was like on the line, on the box, and he gets to one-handedly and gets the ball in the barrel, and it goes out. I don't think with the knee bothering him that he puts himself in that position to hit that particular pitch. So some of these pitches that he's reached for in the past would be rollover ground balls to third, but now they're going into the outfield over the wall. So that I definitely believe there's a direct correlation between that and how well his knee is feeling.
With Kyle Schwarber, it's weird to say this, but to say that he's been doing this quietly, you know, the 19 home runs in the second half, his OPS in the second half of the season is close to 950. I know that we talked a little bit about it over the last couple of weeks, but why does he look more centered at the plate this second half of the season than he looked in the first?
Because he's better mechanically, period. First half, he was really leaking out a lot, getting heavy on his front side, a lot of drifting with his head in his bottom half. And when you do that, you can't stay behind the baseball consistently. With that, also out and around the ball, hooking a lot of ground balls to the pool side. Now, think about it. If you've watched him, and I know you have recently, a lot of really well-struck balls to left center, left field. He's hit, I think, one or two balls hard down the right field line, but they weren't rollovers. They were like line drives. So I think primarily the difference is where he's at in the box physically. And watch when he's in concluding his swing, like the home run he hit last night. Watch how he hits the ball, and he could just stand there for 5 seconds if he chose to because his balance is so great. And that's because he's not leaking forward. So it's really been a nice physical adaptation on his part. It's something that I thought he's been capable of doing all along, but he wasn't. And now he is. And look at the RBIs. See, that's the part of his game that I know he's been wanting to get better at, and what he's done there is spectacular too.
When the pupil is ready, the teacher will appear, right?
Always, man, always. You know, you got to keep being redundancy. Teaching is being redundant. And sometimes when you get redundant with the guy or player or pupil, whatever, they're thinking like, my God, he just told me that yesterday. Does he think I'm stupid? Well, no, but you got to hear it again. And then eventually it infiltrates. It gets into your substance somehow. And then you say, when you start doing it right, then you'll say, oh, that's what he meant. And I'm saying that from personal experience as a young baseball player with some coaches I had back in with the Angels, and they're trying to get me to do almost the same thing, stay behind the ball. And finally, one day, I felt everything. I'm thinking to myself, ah, that's what they meant. And it's a combination of knowing or hearing and understanding, but the bigger component is feeling.
How satisfying is it as an instructor for you and your staff when you tell a guy, hey, look, middle away, that's what we want you to do. Then they get there, and then they see results. And then you're able to see their joy in seeing the results.
Yeah, listen, that's what we do. I mean, really, again, good coaching is being redundant. Good coaching is being able to say the same thing in other words, meaning that what I say to you, I may have to say differently than, say, Anthony Rizzo or Kyle Schwarber, because the way it's said and the words utilized mean different things to different people. Semantics are so important when getting a point across. So that's why I think the best coaches are able to coach the same point by saying it in other terms, in other words, to different guys until finally it reaches and it infiltrates. And at that point, like I said, when you watch the guy and he's making the correct move and the guy tells you, yeah, I feel it, then you know you got something. But if he doesn't say, I feel it, you still haven't arrived at that point.
You brought up Castellanos. His Wrigley Field splits are pretty amazing. When you start talking about a guy who's hitting above 400 in the, 21, 22 games that he's played at Wrigley Field. On top of that, he's got, 55 doubles on the season, which is insane. Is there a player that you can think of that he reminds you of?
Well, I mean, the way he stays inside the baseball. And again, that's the tried and true method. That's what I've been talking about as the opposed to just trying to launch angle everything. He gets the barrel to the ball because he stays inside it. It's no secret why the ball's on the lines and the gap's hard, because he gets the barrel to the ball. He exposes the thick part of the bat to the baseball, and he doesn't get long and sweepy with his arms trying to lift everything, although he's able to put the ball in the air well. Like I said, Edgar Martinez, J.D. Martinez, Miguel Cabrera, they've had that kind of approach in the past. That's for me, the tried and true. Jimmy Evans like that. I had Garrett Anderson like that. They were all inside the ball approach, kind of a Timmy Salmon at fish. All these guys were really able to work from the pull gap to the opposite field line. And to me, that's the best way to do it. And that's why he's so successful, man. All this guy does is hit gaps in lines. He doesn't roll over very often because he stays inside the ball, which puts his hands in a better position to drive the ball to the entire field.
What's been going on with your rotation? I mean, obviously, Hendricks' last start was really great. Darvish has been fantastic in the second half. But the other guys seem to have struggled. Is there anything that you can put your finger on why they're struggling?
For me, it's counts, bad counts. I just like to see, talking about Johnny and Cole and Q, just get more aggressive, assertive in the count. I think, meaning get to, 0-1, 1-2. So start dominating the 1-1 count again. I think we've just been a little bit too fine trying to make pitches and being a little bit less primal. To be a great pitcher, I think you have to be both. You have to have that fine-tuning ability. But this time, you just got to be primal and convicted in your pitch. And so I think that's primarily it. Like last night, having to get Cole so early and having to get Q so early the night before, I mean, man, that puts a – you talk about your bullpen work. So you got to really compliment guys that don't get the credit, Chatwood and Alec – Sir Alec Mills. I mean, last night, my goodness, both those guys really kept these games in order. That's why the Cubs win, and these guys have not gotten nearly enough credit. Rowan Wick was outstanding last night, of course, but Chatwood and Alec Mills primarily won the last two games.
Yeah, you read my mind, because you start looking at bullpen ERA, and your team has done really well with a lot of moving parts and guys being in and out, and you've had really kind of no closer for a big portion of the season either. What does that say about them that you're at this place now where there are a lot of different guys that can be relied on?
Well, yeah, they've been put in a lot of, and I didn't even mention Kyle Ryan. They've been put in a lot of situations they're not used to on this level, and they've responded well. It means a lot. I mean, moving forward, I mean, for us and for them, what it means. I mean, to create this kind of depth with Kimbrel's right on the horizon, too. We have a simulated game with him this afternoon, and that just creates an even greater depth. But, the mind went stretched. It's difficult to go back to original form. All these guys are getting this really high leverage moment in playoff situation, and it's wonderful. It's wonderful to watch their ascension. And Brad Wick, Holson, these guys are good, really good arms also. And so the bullpen's been somewhat maligned, but I'm telling you, Cishek coming back, we're trying to get Kinsler back. Just put all these names together, we could do a lot of different things.
What do you look for when a player's coming back from injury in a sim game? What pops your eye, and what things need to be accomplished in those sim games?
Well, with the pitcher, obviously, it's just the fact that there's no restriction in his arm stroke, that he's not holding back, he's not guarding. It'd be probably the hot buzzword with that. So that he's just letting it go, that the arm stroke looks free and easy. There's a little finish on the ball at home plate. Those are the kind of things that we'll be looking at today. And then the pitcher himself is going to let you know in this situation. When you talk to him afterwards, if there's an easy smile and there's no trepidation, he's probably doing just fine. He's feeling good, and everything's going to be wonderful. But if there's any kind of hesitant thought on the guy's part, then you got to be a little bit more careful, because that means he was feeling something that he's really not wanting people to know. But sometimes they just reveal themselves in that way.
My colleague Dan Bernstein brings up the idea of the Wrigley Field as an emotional amplifier. I think it's a really good way to talk about Wrigley Field. What's winning at Wrigley Field, especially this time of the season, like?
Oh, wow. I mean, I think I've talked about that since I've been here. Nothing like it. There's nothing like it. I think it's the best venue in all of sport. I don't care if you talk about college football stadiums, Major League Baseball stadiums, NFL. Like, you could talk about all these soccer venues, whatever, although I have not been to all of them. But there's nothing like Wrigley Field. Man. I mean, you're in a neighborhood. And this ballpark's been existing there for 100 years, and the way that it's the redo, the refresh has been unbelievable. And then you get all of that, but then you put our fans in there. Nobody's like that. Like I said, I haven't experienced the soccer venues, and I would imagine that would be the closest rivalry to this, to our place. But there's no venue like Wrigley. It's a combination of the edifice, the structure, and the people that attend. The building and our fans provide the energy.
All right, Joe. I had a lot of people reach out via Twitter last night because I said we need more questions for Joe's Box. And Cubs fans obliged with some really good questions. So I got a couple I want to run at you before I let you go. You ready?
Cool. Yes, sir.
What is something that most people learn only after it's too late?
The grass isn't always greener, brother. It's not always greener. I mean, we always think it's a better something somewhere else. And that's the one thing I learned early on. The grass is not always greener on the other side of the fence. It's an old concept or thought, but I think that most people do believe that. You need to make best of what you got and where you're at in your existence. And when you're always wishing and hoping, don't wish and hope in your life away, man. Live the present tense. If you're always living in the future, brother, this whole thing blows right by you, and that's a sad existence. So the grass isn't greener, and please live in the present tense.
This one's from Steve, and he asks, which dad character would you want to play if you could reboot any sitcom?
Any sitcom. Well, you know, back in the day, I think A Father's Knows Best, really, I think it was his last name was Young. And I think of leave it to Beaver. Ward Cleaver was solid, man. I really liked him. I don't know, Ward Cleaver. I mean, that was one of the, that show. And Andy Griffin. Andy was solid, too.
He was really, now that I go back and I watch some of that stuff,